Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, we got our first opportunity to hear from Stephen Vogt and Chris Antonetti out in Goodyear. They sat down, talked to reporters prior to the club's workout on Thursday, and covered a variety of topics, went over some injuries, and really just sort of set things up before they got to work out there doing baseball things, I guess, as Stephen Vogt likes to call it. What did you take away from that first availability, the two of them sitting there sort of playing off of each other, and any sort of surprises come out of that that you weren't anticipating?
You know, no big surprises, Joe. I guess, you know, the big thing I took out of that is Shane Bieber and Tristan McKenzie are, you know, got the green light. They're going to be no restrictions, although Chris Antonetti said, you know, Tristan will be brought along a little slower than normal. But, you know, Bieber and McKenzie looks like, you know, they're going to hit the ground running. And the same goes for the three rookies from last year. Logan Allen, Gavin Williams, and Tanner Bibee, no restrictions. They're asking them to be smart. You know, they don't want them throwing, trying to break the sound barrier in their first couple live BP sessions. But, you know, they should be ready for the Cactus League season, which is just around the corner, Joe. February 24th, they open up against the Reds.
Yeah, it's a week from tomorrow. They get out there and get going with real games. And when you said, you know, with the younger guys, they're not trying to go out there and you know, throw it through a wall or anything like that to start the season. That makes a lot of sense. You want to protect them and make sure that they're pitching as strong at the end of the season as they would be when they build up to be ready to go at the start of the season. All of what they said makes sense. So now it's just a matter of getting out there, going through the workouts, going through the drills, and learning the new system, the new faces, the new coaches, and all that. And a week from tomorrow, they'll be on the field for real. As far as injuries go, one name did pop up sort of on an injury concern there. They mentioned one of the relief pitchers.
Yeah, James Karinchak has been shut down for a few days. Antonetti called it a fatigue in the right shoulder. I'm not sure if he was, I would imagine he's been in camp for a while. Everybody else has been. So he must have been throwing earlier, and maybe, just as precaution, they shut him down. But, you know, this is a guy that two springs ago had the teres major injury and missed all the camps. Mm-hmm. So, he's a guy they've got to keep an eye on. You know, he's a really hard worker, and maybe he pushed it a little too far during the off season. We'll have to see and, kind of track that, because that sounds like, obviously a day-to-day thing, Joe, and you're not getting through spring training without somebody getting hurt.
No, it's usually a couple of weeks into spring training that we see some of these fatigue and the little nicks and whatever emerge and shut down. And not unusual to see somebody have to miss a few days or be out for a little period of time. But hopefully Karinchak can recover and bounce back. And who knows what he was doing in the off season in terms of if he went to a place like a Driveline or one of those specialty shops to work on stuff. And it could have just been a matter of maybe pushing a little too hard at that point. But we'll see. Hopefully this doesn't develop into something bigger than that. The other news that sort of emerged from the Guardians yesterday. We finally have a time, and we already had the date and we already had the location, but we finally got a first pitch time for the Guardians home opener, which coincides with the total solar eclipse in Cleveland on April 8th. The Guardians have decided to move that first pitch time back to 5:10 p.m. Normally, home openers have at least ones that haven't dealt with lockouts or COVID or anything like that. Usually they like to do their home opener with a 4:10 pitch, first pitch at home in that first game. Because of the solar eclipse, which should be peaking right around 3:15 p.m., they're going to move this first pitch start time back. And really, that makes a lot of sense as far as all that goes. So maybe we'll get a chance to actually, during our pregame work that we're doing there at the ballpark, we'll actually get a chance to stop and look up and watch the eclipse.
Yeah, Joe, that'll be cool. But my question is, what if it's snowing and for the home opener? And it's all cloudy. Do we still get to see the eclipse? Do we get a replay somewhere along the line?
I think a lot of people will be disappointed if it's an overcast day at the ballpark, but there should be a lot of people downtown. The Guardians are telling people, if you can, take RTA. They're anticipating major downtown traffic snarls, and a lot of businesses and schools are closing that day. People in Cleveland, think of the home opener as a holiday anyways. So it's not that unusual, but to have some sort of celestial activity going on in the middle of it is definitely going to be unusual. I can't wait to see what the effect is like. I read somewhere, there's people that are hoping that they don't turn the ballpark lights on at 3:15, so that we get the full effect of the moon blocking out the sun for the 3 to 4 minutes or however long it's going to take for that to happen. So should be interesting. Should be quite an intense afternoon. And then after that, you get to play baseball, and we get to see the Guardians and the White Sox open the home portion of the schedule there. So should be a lot of fun. The other thing to emerge from that release was that tickets, obviously, single game tickets are on sale today for all Guardians fans, online only, because the ballpark box offices are shut down due to construction. But the big thing was they released the broadcast schedule and the times for all of the games on the schedule. And something of note for the rest of this season, or for the entirety of the season, in years past, we've seen games in April and May moved to a 6:10 start time. They did that a few years back. Because traditionally the weekday games in April and May, not really great weather and sometimes not really highly attended. So they want to get you into the ballpark, get you out early. But then once the kids are out of school, games from June until September had in the past gone back to a 7:10 start time. Well, now the Guardians are going to move up that weekday summer start time from 7:10 to 6:40. So they move it up a half hour, and Hoynsie, this is going to result in most of us getting out of the ballpark at a relatively decent hour every night.
Yeah, that's really for writers that's great. The earlier the start time, the less the deadline pressure, and Joe, that's a life, that's a game changer. Now with the new rules, You know, with the games being sped up by about 30 minutes, you know, this, yeah, you gotta, you're going to have to write fast and watch fast.
Yeah, we don't want to step away for too long because you come back and it's already the seventh inning. In years past, when I'm writing a game story, I might have to, you know, at least have my lead, at least have most of my story written, you know, around the seventh inning. And now it's more like the fifth because these games are just flying by, which is a good thing in a lot of ways for a lot of folks who watch. So something to keep an eye on is the average finishing time of a game, not the amount of game time played, but, you know, how late people are getting out of the park at night. It could be, you know, maybe as early as 9 o'clock on some of those nights, which would be interesting. All right. I want to remind our listeners, hey, if you're you know, following our coverage here of the Guardians as we get ready to head out to a good year for spring training, the best way to stay on top of everything is through Guardian subtext. We text message to all of our subscribers throughout the day with updates. And as soon as we have breaking news, we send it out to you. It's $3.99 a month to subscribe, and you can log on and join by going to cleveland.com/subtext or by sending a text message to 216-208-4346. Hoynsey, we wanted to continue our sort of little breakdown ahead of spring training. We looked at all of the other position groups, you know, on the field and with the ball club. Lastly, you know, the biggest question mark, the biggest, you know, problem area, the biggest black hole on the team right now is the outfield. Sort of similar to the infield in that, you know, one of the spots is pretty much spoken for and locked down in left field with Stephen Kwan. We can get into that, but, you know, just your thoughts in general over the last several years about the Guardians outfield, its production, its productivity on both sides of the ball, really. What have you thought of what the Guardians have been able to do over the last several years with their outfielders?
Well, it hasn't, you know, Joe, I mean, just speaking for the last couple years, they really haven't, it hasn't been a traditional outfield, you know, with the exception of Kwan, you know, who's a leadoff hitter, you know, and even he isn't an exceptional, you know, kind of a prototypical corner outfielder. You know, he's a starting left fielder, two-time Gold Glove winner, and he's a leadoff hitter, but he is, you know, he's a table setter. This outfield produces no power. They hit, 18 home runs last season, totaled 18 home runs from the six, seven, or eight different guys that played out there. And you're just not going to win like that, Joe. And there hasn't been a whole lot of change out there either. So, you know, I think, you know, when you look at last season's club, you know, the holes in the lineup were produced by catching at the catcher position and in the outfield. You know, Bo Naylor should help, you know, solidify the catching situation, but the outfield situation is, you know, is just as dire as it was last season to me.
Yeah, that's the problem, I think, that we're seeing here is that there hasn't been much change made to address those issues. And even when they did bring in, you know, acquisitions like Estevan Florial and, you know, they re-upped with Ramon Laureano, who they acquired at the end of the year. You know, those really don't sort of address the lack of power. You know, maybe Florial hits the way that he did in AAA last year, but there isn't just that one guy who's going to sit there and give you 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. They can't, you know, produce that guy from their farm system yet, and they haven't been willing to go out and pay for the services of somebody who can do that. So let's start. You mentioned Kwan. You start in left field. He's been pretty durable over his career so far. The 2 years that they've had him. You know, when they moved him, they found his spot as a leadoff hitter. Do you expect, you know, 150 some games and, you know, batting first in the order out of Stephen Kwan again this year?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so, Joe. I mean, you know, Kwan in a traditional outfield, you know, he would be kind of the cherry on top of the chocolate sundae, you know, if you had guys that could produce runs, you know, in right field and perhaps in center field, then you could get away with Kwan playing left field. Well, Kwan probably is a traditional center fielder, and, you know, you'd have power from the corners, but they don't have that. But so, you know, Kwan is, you know, has proven to be, you know, a solid, you know, big league player in his first 2 years. He's done everything they could have asked for him. Two gold gloves. He's scored 93 runs last year to lead the team. You know, he walk to strikeout ratio, 70 walks to 75 Ks. His batting average dipped a little bit, but still, I think this guy is only going to get better. He's the shining light in the outfield, Joe.
Yeah, the Baseball Reference projections have him with a batting average somewhere north of 281 in 550 some at bats for the season. So, you know, if the projections hold up, and you know, that's pretty good, and only 74 strikeouts on the season. I mean, that would be interesting numbers that Baseball Reference projects for him. And if he holds to those, that's, like you said, that's a good positive spot there in the outfield. And as far as the idea of him maybe moving around, maybe moving to center field or anything like that, that would be probably based more on if they bring somebody up to and have to find a place for him, like a George Valera or somebody who needs to play left field instead of, hanging out in center.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, I think, you know, what Kwan has done in left field, you know, it's a lot like, Jimenez at second base. You know, you've got a gold glove defender there. You know, he knows the position. He's played his tail off. And he's done nothing, he's done nothing to deserve being moved. But I guess, you know, he said at the end of last season, he said he can play anywhere in the outfield. He said he can play center field. Would he be willing to do that? I'm sure he would. But, you know, if you're the Guardians, you got to be wondering, do I weaken myself at two positions? And if I make a move like that, I like right. defense, and you like a gold glover out there in left field.
Yeah. And you also like a gold glover in center field. And that's, essentially what you've got in Miles Straw. You just like to see a little more offensively out of him. The depth behind Straw in center, or maybe in front of him, depending on how things go here in spring training. Ramon Laureano, Will Brennan, and Estevan Florial are the guys on the 40-man roster. How do you see center field shaking out if Straw continues to struggle in the way that he did through much of the last two seasons?
Well, if Miles continues to struggle, you know, if he's not going to get 518 plate appearances like he did last season, there's no way that's going to happen. You know, they brought Florial in here for a reason. He's out of options. One of the few guys on this roster that are out of options. I think he's going to get a real long look in center field. That 28 home runs he hit at AAA last year for the Yankees, I think, is carrying some weight going into camp. And, Joe, if he does that, if he has that kind of season in the big leagues, in the Cleveland outfield, they'll build a statue to him as soon as this season ends.
Yeah, if he can hit 28 home runs, that would be impressive. I don't know. Baseball Reference has their projections. They have Straw getting, you know, under that 500 at-bats, only 462. And him hitting in the 245 range. So if that's the case, then, you know, you're going to be talking about a guy who, moves from being the regular everyday starting center fielder to, you know, maybe a guy that they bring in defensively at the end of games. And certainly his glove can, you know, sort of warrant that kind of a move. It's just you're paying this guy. He's got a contract and, you know, you'd like to see him be able to produce. Laureano is interesting because, they have him under contract as well. And they brought him back, after last year. And this is a guy who can play multiple positions in the outfield and is also a very, very highly rated, at least with his arm, very highly rated outfielder in that regard.
Yeah, he's got a good arm. We've seen him in center and right field after Cleveland claimed him on waivers from Oakland. Joe, I mean, he had 220, you know, with the A's in Cleveland, he had 224 last season, 18 doubles, four triples, nine home runs, 35 RBIs. You know, he's a platoon guy. And I think, you know, everybody in that outfield except Kwan is a platoon guy until they prove different. So, you know, I think Laureano, if he, you know, I guess, you know, Joe, I guess he, you know, he, this is a, you know, they signed him so early. He was eligible for arbitration, you know, but they signed him for what, over, just over $5 million, a 1 year deal. So, you know, he's going to be part of this outfield one way or the other. And I would think we're going to see him mostly in center and right field.
Yeah, that's my feeling is that he'll, you know, maybe platoon with Florial out there. Who knows?
Yeah.
And knock Straw back even further. It all depends. But he's also, he can give you a look, you know, if you want to run Straw out there in center and put Laureano in right when you inevitably will face left-handed pitching, because that's what all teams have been doing against this Guardians club for the last several years is stacking up their left-handed starters. So there will be at-bats for Ramon Laureano on this club as they move forward, and that brings up, you know, another platoon type player. The guy who saw the majority of his time in right field last year was Will Brennan, and you know what we saw out of Brennan was it was positive. He was able to put the bat on the ball. You know, the big league pitching wasn't too much for him. He just hasn't, you know, produced the numbers that he produced at AAA in terms of the power and the run production in that regard. What do you need to see more out of Will Brennan moving forward to make him a permanent part of this outfield?
Yeah, Joe, I think like you hit the nail on the head. It's got to be more production. I mean, he hit .266. That's well above the league average. But, you know, there was no there almost, you know, it was, you know, 115 hits, 24 doubles, five home runs, 41 RBIs, 655 OPS, you know, an 83 OPS plus when 100, you know, is league average, you know, so, you know, he's put, like you said, we're seeing, you know, contact, you know, I think he's got to get a better control of the strike zone, you know, 57 strikeouts compared to 16 walks, but we're seeing contact. We're not just seeing power, and I'm not talking about hitting the ball out of the park. You know, a guy like, if Brennan isn't going to hit home runs, and he really traditionally hasn't hit a whole lot of home runs, but he's going to have to hit doubles. He's going to have to hit triples. He's going to have to, you know, hit with runners on base to be effective.
So there are, it's sort of like a revolving door out there in right field now. In terms of the depth chart, you've got guys listed, Will Brennan, Ramon Laureano. They even list Gabriel Arias, who played a bunch of games out in right field last year, along with David Fry and maybe even Josh Naylor. These are all possibilities out there in right field. Like we've said, the most likely scenario is a platoon with Brennan and Laureano right now moving forward. But there are options in camp right now. The other outfielders who are sort of on the roster, you know, make you take notice. Jonathan Rodriguez, guy who has an excellent arm and was the hitting story of the player development system last year. He was probably the Guardians' best minor league hitter all around last year. George Valera, a guy that they've been, you know, waiting for, very highly rated prospect, and he's battled some injuries the last couple of seasons. He's a guy to keep an eye on in terms of a breakout. Petey Halpin is he's in camp as a non-roster invitee, younger guy. Also, even you know, they're going to have a chance to look at Chase DeLauder. Any of these guys that are, you know, sort of not in line towards the top to make the team, but could be in position to maybe come up and help at some point during the season if they don't start the year off on the major league roster.
Yeah, I think, you know, a guy like Valera, Joe, you know, he had, you know, kind of last year was a wash with the hand injury, and he pulled a hamstring at Columbus, but he still hit 11 home runs at Columbus in 73 games, and that's something to keep in the back of your mind. Rodriguez is a really interesting guy, like you were saying, Joe. What, 29 home runs, 88 RBIs. He had 286, 26 doubles. This guy's got some thump. You just don't know. I haven't seen him play a whole lot. In the outfield, you don't know what kind of defender he is. But who knows? He could be in the running for the D, to help out a DH. Because, Joe, how many left-handed hitters do they have on this team? It's really hard to balance this lineup. They have one lefty after another lefty. Even their prospects are lefties. So, I think that's going to be an interesting challenge for Steven Vogt. But, yeah, and Halpin is an interesting guy, a high-round pick out of high school a couple years ago. He was at AA last year. Center fielder, he can go get the ball. 243 last season, 23 doubles, 9 homers, 38 RBIs. He was 12 for 14 in stolen bases. So it's kind of an action player, a guy, that's probably not ready yet, but, to keep a guy to keep your eye on in the last couple of years. Chase DeLauder, I think he's in the depth camp out in Goodyear right now. He's probably starting the season at AA. He hasn't, got a lot of tools, Joe, but he hasn't played a whole lot, with the broken foot. At James Madison, and he re-injured the foot, last spring. So he got a slow start to last year. So I think he's going to have to play some games before, he comes up and is able to help this club.
Yeah, and if there's a point where he's needed to come up play at the major league level, I think it's definitely later in the season, maybe September, or maybe he just spends the entire season between AA and AAA, but making that sort of progress. Would you be stunned if George Valera doesn't make his major league debut at some point this season?
No, if he's healthy, he's going to be up here, Joe. I would, they've shown I think they want to see Valera up here, and they haven't been real restrictive in shuttling guys up and down. So, I would think we'll see Valera if he's healthy, if he's sound, if he's hitting the ball hard out of the ballpark in Columbus, he's going to get a shot here.
Okay. It's Major League starting outfield, day one, opening day in Oakland. Who do you got from left field to right field for the Guardians in the opener against the A's?
I'm going Kwan in left, Florial in center, and Laureano in right field. Laureano coming back and starting against his old ball club.
There you go. I'll change it up just a little bit. I'll say Brennan in right field. Just maybe they DH Laureano, or depends on if there's a righty or a lefty on the mound for the A's. But yeah, I do think that change is going to be made. It's going to be made. Maybe even early in camp, Florial moves to the front of the pack in center, and they sort of tell Straw, hey, it's either get with it or get moving. So, all right, that's going to wrap up our look at the Guardians outfield and the depth behind it as they head into training camp. Hoynsie, the next step for you is a plane ride out to Goodyear. So we'll wish you safe travels out there, and we'll talk to you from camp early next week.
Good deal, Joe.